Is it more important to preserve vaccine confidence than public health? This is the subject that I'll be exploring tonight in this opinion piece with me, Dan Aston Gregory. Before I dive into tonight's subject, I wanted to tell a little joke. Prepare yourselves. So, what does a criminal do when they flee the scene of a crime? It turns out they appear on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you probably haven't watched the last 500 episodes of the Pandemic Podcast. You may have noticed that Matt Hancock has recently featured in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And if you need any explaining why he's a criminal, then where have you been for the last couple of years? But it does seem that I don't watch the show, but if I did, I'm sure others would inform me that it has a history of featuring criminals. Now, why am I starting with this particular joke? I don't think I would have got too many laughs, but the reality is, in the context of tonight's conversation, where I'm going to be asking, is it more important to preserve vaccine confidence than public health? We have to start to assess some of the behaviors of vaccine manufacturers and the pharmaceutical industry and the regulators and the media and social media, the tech platforms, etc. Because I've been pondering this as on a daily basis now I see new articles, new papers, new evidence emerging literally on a daily basis. I mean, I just searched my, I use a couple of different research tools to support my content, and by no stretch do I only follow publications that offer critical voices on the matters of COVID-19 and vaccines. I follow a whole breadth of subject matter so I can keep abreast of the pro-narrative and critical narrative, if you will. And nonetheless, on a daily basis, I'm witnessing new empirical evidence, which document pathological evidence that showcases the potential harms caused by the mass pharmaceutical interventions over the last couple of years. I think you can read between the lines. We're broadcasting to social media here, Facebook and YouTube simultaneously. There are certain words that we can't use now because as we're speaking, our content is being automatically transcribed by very clever AI. And if we say certain words in certain order, it means that our content will be taken down and we may potentially lose our channel, and our entire livelihood relies on our ability to be able to communicate with people yourself. And therein itself is a particular quandary, because if these things were as they purported to be, would public health officials have to go to such lengths in order to preserve vaccine confidence? Let's face it, we can't even have a conversation about vaccine confidence. I've already said the V word too many times as part of this episode. I'm getting the chills because I know when I end this episode, I could wake up to an email tomorrow morning saying you lost your account and got to start all over again. Quite literally, if you're watching this for the first time, you think, what are you talking about? Quite honestly, this is what we're facing. I mean, the level of censorship I faced in the last couple of years is outstanding. We lost our first channel when we hit 5 million views talking about vitamin C, for goodness sake. We have to ask the question, what length will these public officials go in order to preserve vaccine confidence? And I told the silly joke about Matt Hancock and what do criminals do when they flee the scene, really because I was pondering this, in that if you'd committed a crime and you didn't want to be caught for that crime, what would you do? Now, I don't necessarily have a criminal mind, so forgive me for not knowing necessarily the steps that one would normally take if they had committed a crime and wanted to cover their tracks. But you can presume if you wanted to stay out of prison, out of jail, you didn't want to get arrested, you would probably take steps to make sure you're very careful not to get caught. And that would include hiding evidence. You know, if you'd committed a robbery, for instance, you wore gloves, you know, you might want to throw those away. You know, there's a whole bunch of steps that you would go through. You know, if it's a high value robbery, you might make sure like the CCTV in the area is erased. I don't know. But you would go to all of these lengths to make sure that your tracks were covered in order to prevent you from being caught for the crimes that you've committed, I would assume, unless you're just very crafty. Now, why do I ask this? Well, let me be perfectly obvious for you. Let's look at the lengths that the pharmaceutical industry and the regulators and the public health bodies are going to suppress evidence. Does an innocent person who hasn't committed a crime, even if they've been accused falsely of committing a crime, do they go to great lengths to try and cover their tracks? The reality is an innocent person doesn't have to take any step to cover any evidence or cover their tracks because they're innocent. So Common Sense Corner here, we like to refer it on our show, would suggest that if you're going to great lengths to try and cover your tracks and hide evidence and suppress data and facts, that there is surely a smoking gun, surely. And we have to ask ourselves why. And there's a whole manner of reasons why. And I'm sure many people believe that, you know, the extent that people are going to try and cover up these harms, which we're now seeing in not only empirical data, as I mentioned, but the pathological evidence, you know, evidence across every aspect of the human body, but all the anecdotal stories as well, the real life stories of people who've got these harms. And there's a whole bunch of people who've got sick in the temporal proximity of these interventions, and they've not attributed their symptoms or death to this particular decision that they've made. And that could reflect a whole manner of people, because we've only got a certain restricted amount of data on the situation, given that there's an underreporting factor, a significant underreporting factor that's well documented and in the Harvard studies and such. So we know that even despite the limited data, there is an overwhelming amount of evidence. Yeah, it's almost like that people are trying to paper over the cracks to try and kind of brush it under the carpet and deny that there's a problem. And this is peculiar. So some people might believe that there is malevolent intent here, whether it's a depopulation approach or, you know, because they can't, it's difficult to grasp your mind around why would all of this information be suppressed. Now, I don't necessarily believe that, but I think it's important to keep our minds open. You know, I struggle to believe that there are so many people around the world involved in a grand conspiracy. I mean, there is literally, you know, if you think about a global rollout at this scale, there's thousands of people. But we also know from the concepts of mass formation that this type of totalitarian approach can happen subconsciously, you know, and it can happen very easily. However, let's put that aside for one moment and assume that there is grounds to investigate that. But to do so and to measure intent, and you know, we're down all kinds of tricky avenues there. But let's look at this potential issue of vaccine confidence. Let's presuppose and let's explore another explanation for the purposes of this episode. Let's imagine, and we cited this on the pandemic podcast early on, because we are dealing with, and you know, there was a time, by the way, when people used the term experimental vaccine technology or experimental mRNA technology. To use the term experimental would get you fact-checked and censored. Let's be honest, this is crazy. Isn't it crazy? Go and have a look at the history of human testing of mRNA vaccines on human beings. There is very limited data. There's far from any extensive research on human trials. So it's very reasonable to call it experimental. You know, you can dress it up and use some other fancy synonym to describe its status as a new product, but you can't hide from the fact it's experimental. So we cited early on the podcast that given its experimental status and given that it's limited in terms of its trial, and loads of the evidence that's coming out now suggesting that, you know, it was never proven that it would prevent transmission. That was clear early on from the trial protocols. I mean, the BMJ wrote about it. They said that there's no endpoint being tested here. So it's not a recent revelation. We've known this since the beginning. But of course, anyone that talked about that at the time, it's like you're conspiracy theory, anti-vaxxers. It's like, well, no, it's just here. It's just in black and white. We can see it. But all of that was like brushed under carpet again, hide the fact. Because we've got this story that this thing is going to get us out of this whole situation. And if you don't get it, then it's your fault. Like, it's your fault for spreading the thing. just insane. And we actually lived during a time. I lived during a time in 2021, whereby despite the evolution of the human race and the atrocities that we've been through history, I lived through a time, you and I lived through a time where people who were vaccinated or unvaccinated were being pretty much segregated from one another by proxy or by policy. in some cases, physically. I mean, I've got images of certain nations around the world where they were literally segregating people by their vaccine status. This is ludicrous. And this is on the basis, on the predication, that this product would prevent transmission. It was quite, even if, and let's be fair, even if it was true, even if it was the most bulletproof product on earth, and it just was 100% effective, or 95%, even the original claim, laughable. Even let's say, suppose it was the most bulletproof product on earth, it would still be immoral to segregate people unless it was literally life and death for a vast sum of people, which we know the IFR. We don't need to go on the IFR. We don't need to go down the infection fatality rate here to understand that this particular predicament was never going to be an existential threat to the majority of humanity. Like, if you still can't get your head around this now, you're just starting to look at things. There's 500 episodes. We've been on it since, like, the beginning. So where was I? So we live during a time where this actually occurred. So we supposed at the time that, given the experimental status and given that there was this global thing that we wanted to overcome, that the vaccine manufacturers, the regulators alike, would make certain extended tolerances when it comes to risk. And several of us speculated to what degree would public health bodies allow a greater degree of adverse reactions and fatalities on the premise of the greater good. Now, the greater good is an entirely different subject that we'll talk about in depth. We've got an episode in the works, several episodes in the works, and we've got some guests to come and talk about this, about how the greater good has essentially been hijacked. You know, the conversation we were just having around segregating humanity based upon their product choices when it comes to medical interventions is an example of utilizing or hijacking the idea of the greater good, protecting one another to certain ends. And we can look back at that and say that was criminal. We can say, or very least, immoral, unethical. There are certain things we could say about all of these things. But we're not going to go there today, but it's an important subject. But the very fact that this was deemed in the greater good to curtail the impact of COVID-19 and to bring the pandemic to an end, I mean, let's be clear, it was never going to work like that. You know, I just don't know what happened to the scientific field during this entire period. I'm not a scientist, but in the last 2 years, I've become friends with quite a few of them. And just science just disappeared. I call it science with a small s, small s science now. It's like the science. It's not real science. It's this ideological, dogmatic, narrative-based science that's not grounded in evidence or empirical reality. But we've had this situation whereby, you know, there may have been some heightened tolerances, you know, which I don't necessarily agree with, but you could acknowledge why that would be undertaken. But to what extent would you allow? You know, what level of variance in risk would you allow? Because in my mind, looking at all the data now, like, we have gone way beyond. I mean, there's other medical products that have caused like an infinitesimally smaller fraction of harm, and they've been pulled from the market. Yet this thing is being rolled out continuously. And isn't it bizarre? Like, isn't it just bizarre? And I won't be allowed to say this. I'll get censored. So I'm like, every time I think about like just saying things as they are, observable realities. Let me try and phrase this in a way so that the AI bots or human beings watching this don't get their knickers in a twist about what I'm saying. So you've got a data set here which examines mortality, all-cause mortality, and you've got a data set that examines COVID cases, and you've got a set of data that shows you how many vaccines have been rolled out. So why is it each one of these graphs, every time there's a major rollout of a particular medical intervention, the other two graphs follow? Isn't that peculiar in a high volume of cases? We can't talk about that. I'm already not talking about that. In fact, if I was being clever of language, I could say things like, if I was to say, to indicate that I didn't just say what I said. You might be like, what are you doing, Dan? What are you saying? This is the lengths we have to go to avoid censorship, to talk about the truth. And if you don't think that's weird by now, what planet are you on? So let's get to the main essence of the story. Is it more important to preserve vaccine confidence than public health? So given what I've just said, all of this suppression of information It's like the public health bodies, and this is just one angle. There's many angles we could explore. I'm not presenting the whole truth and nothing but the truth. I'm presenting a segment of a possible theory to why, of many theories, by the way, of why the behavior is unfolding in the way that it is. And I think it is important that we do examine the kind of complexity and the nuances of this thing, because it's easy to follow what mainstream media do and oversimplify things down to like single stories. We have to look at this in its complex reality, the systems theory around this. But let's suppose that in the public health body's eyes, that if they allow the actual truth and reality to be presented to the public in its unadulterated truth self, the vaccine harms, adverse reactions, the fatalities, and all the evidence, and it was rolled out into the media and all of the uproar that would follow, it's inevitably what would follow is that people would lose confidence, not just in the current set of products, but perhaps the whole suite of products. And I'm not talking just about COVID-19. I'm talking about every vaccination, and that vaccine confidence would be decimated if the full story about the COVID injections was allowed to be unfolded. Now, I think this is a very reasonable explanation. I don't think it's reasonable behavior, but I think it's a reasonable explanation that there are people out there right now who are desperately clinging on to the idea that by suppressing any information that criticizes or challenges the safety and efficacy of the vaccinations, by suppressing that information, somehow they are protecting vaccine confidence. Because if you lose vaccine confidence, then all of a sudden, you know, people no longer go for their routine vaccinations, blah, blah, blah. Now, let's assume that there are a portion of people in doing this who are doing so out of, in their mind, of benevolent good. They think that by doing so, they are taking people's public health in their hands, and they're doing things for the public interest because of their strong belief in vaccinations as a whole. Now, I'm not going to open the can of worms about the safety and efficacy of every single vaccine, although it's perfectly reasonable, given what we've been through, for us to actually examine things with a bit more depth. But this is what happens when you suppress information. As I go back full circle to the beginning of this story, if you start to kind of hide your tracks and suppress evidence, people are going to be suspicious. If you start behaving like a criminal, people are going to start asking questions. And that's exactly what's been happening. But of course, that has now more than lifted the lid of distrust on just the COVID vaccines. It has, for many people, completely shot their trust, not only in vaccines as a whole, but medical science. And that's a really sad thing to see, because it's very difficult to restore that trust. And people want to be able to go to their doctor, their GP, their hospital, and trust that they have their best interest. And in most cases, they will have their best interest in heart. But what we've seen is that best interests are often over, you know, the emotion and the narrative that can accompany that in the idea of the greater good can override rational, logical thinking, critical thinking, and actually addressing things at face value for what they really are. So the counterintuitive thing that public health may be trying to do here to preserve vaccine confidence is actually damaging vaccine confidence. Who here who's watching this with me right now has lost, whose confidence has not only been lost in COVID vaccines, but vaccines more broadly? And I know there'll be some people who have got a history of addressing vaccines and lost their confidence a long time ago. That's fair enough. But how many people watching this right now, write in the comments, tell me in the comments that your confidence has been struck more broadly as a result of what's happened in the last couple of years. Now, this, unfortunately, lots of people saying yes in the comments. This is you know, Christina, Nita, Jules, Debbie, all saying yes, you know, Fiona, lots of people in the comments saying yes, they've lost their trust. I share that loss of trust. Absolutely. So it's counterintuitive. The reality is that transparency and openness is what creates trust. I think we would be more trusting if public health officials from the beginning had been very transparent, said it is an experimental product. We've got the situation outside of us here. We've got some vulnerable groups and we need to take steps to try and mitigate the risks. And therefore, we've got this product. It's going to come with some risks. We don't know. We haven't got long-term data. But our best bet is that this is our best shot. If they'd had that level of humility and transparency from the get-go. And then as things came along and showed up, they say, okay, we're seeing some signals, but for this group of people, you know, the risks, the benefits outweigh the risks still, and this is how we're calculating it and have transparency and openness. You could have the same result that we're experiencing now, but people's trust would not have been lost. But what's happened now is that the suppression of information across public health, pharmaceutical companies, media, regulators, social media, big tech. You know, I've joked and played across this episode, but I'm very serious. If you're watching this, if you're new to the show, I'm very serious. The reason I've been dancing around these subjects in this particular way is I do care about my content. It's easy for people to say, just go to Rumble, go to Odyssey, go to BitChute. I could do that, but people in those channels already are in the know. They don't need more information. You don't. We already know the story. You're watching this now. You already know this. But here on these platforms, this is where still the majority of people are hanging out. And I'm trying to reach the 97% of people who haven't yet asked questions about these things, which is why I joke about, you know, what criminals do when they go to escape the scene. They go to I'm a Celebrity because they have to cover their tracks somehow. So, you know, in all seriousness, this is a big issue. A lot of people have lost trust in vaccines. They've lost trust in the medical science. And it's extending to institutions, politics, media. And this is a very devastating place to find ourselves, because where do you go from here? You know, as a brand, Elevate Media, you know, we're looking at building an organization that is a problem-solving organization that could be a catalyst for change. And one of those things is we do want to start thinking about how we can invite investors from around the world to actually fund and develop new solutions to many of these problems. You know, if we don't have trust in media, how do we invest in new media? Independent thinking requires independent thought. Similarly, you know, we've got this massive public health backlog. How do we invest in smart, creative ways to actually heal people that are suffering from all kinds of injuries and all kinds of problems? There has to be things that we can do right now in order to solve this, because, you know, the people that we have previously entrusted to do these things are letting us down. And that's putting it lightly. So Pete says we need wholesale systemic change. I couldn't agree more. We absolutely do. Unfortunately, here's the reality. And we've done this. We looked at this in a number of different workshops. It's much quicker and easier to put a Band-Aid on a current problem. You know, by putting a Band-Aid on, it could be starting a campaign. It could be starting a petition. It could be lobbying your MP. You know, these are things that start to chip away at the problem. They're quick and easy. It's like if you're feeling unwell, you know, it's easy to take a paracetamol to lose your headache, but it takes time to actually transform your health so you don't get sick. You know, so systemic transformation is the same story. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. And I'm going to have to do the hard things in order to create that change, but it's worth it. So, you know, at Elevate, that's what we're really passionate about doing. We're about looking at how do we remove the impediments from human flourishing? How do we create systemic change? Because ultimately, systems and structures are huge impediments to our own flourishing. And we've witnessed in the last couple of years that the vaccine industry, the pharmaceutical industry, the regulation system, these things are all defunct. They're all broken. And the public health authorities that have let us down over the last couple of years, no matter who you are, no matter what angle you look at the story, whether you think that the public health should have done more, you think they should have done less, there should be less restrictions or more, either way, you've been let down. And we have to ask bigger questions about how we solve these things. But ultimately, to answer the key question in today's episode, is it more important to preserve vaccine confidence or public health? The reality is, firstly, the steps that public health are taking to try and keep the lid on the harms in order to preserve vaccine confidence is actually hurting vaccine confidence more. They already know this. It's documented. The psychologists have figured this out a long time ago. But still, they go against that. It's counterintuitive. But the bigger problem here is by trying to preserve vaccine confidence. You know, there'll be people out there who are doing that out of, like I said, benevolent reasons. They think it's for the greater good. But ultimately, what it's doing is preserving profit lines. Ultimately, what it's doing is driving profit. This winter, the booster campaign has already started. It's like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. And every time I see a child on an advert, I feel like it makes me so angry. I burn up inside. It makes me so, so angry. And you don't get to see me very angry on these shows very often. I try to channel it into a way that's more productive and positive. But ultimately, it's not just about vaccine confidence. It's about profit lines, because preserving vaccine confidence preserves profit. And that's what it's really all about. Profit and control. Profit is the main driver here. I think, you know, the wraparounds, the systems around it are the control mechanisms. But here in the pharmaceutical industry, it's money, money, money. It's money, money, money. It's the primary driver of what we're seeing here. So is it more important to preserve vaccine confidence than public health? You know, how many more people need to suffer before the lid is lifted and the veil is revealed to show the underlying reality of what's happening right now? How far does it have to go until we reach a point when enough is enough? What human cost are public healthcare organizations willing to pay before we reach that point and an investigation is launched and tribunals begin, and that those who are accountable for what's happened are held to account? Because ultimately, you know, there was a fantastic documentary series on Netflix which looked at corporate corruption, you know, some famous stories, Volkswagen and how they fix the emissions and all these kind of things. This is nothing on the scale of what companies like Pfizer have done in terms of their fraudulent activity. How long is it before they're properly investigated? They'll probably get another huge fine. They'll continue to operate and they'll continue to proliferate and they'll continue to just take advantage of every given opportunity. Disaster capitalism will continue. You know, there is this last couple of years has really revealed some serious systemic flaws and societal vulnerabilities, which is exactly why we've launched Elevate, really to try and explore how we elevate humanity and enrich the world. You know, how we can actually create an uplifting, positive environment where we can actually start to examine these systemic issues and start to find solutions, not just by talking about them, but actually bringing change makers together to take on key challenges and to combine people with investors and fundraisers and concerned citizens so that together we can actually start to bring the pieces together. It's like a complex jigsaw. We just want to put those pieces together and help find a pathway to create change. Now, I want to conclude on this because my time here is up on this episode. Tomorrow evening, we're going to continue this conversation. We've got a private screening, director's cut screening tomorrow night of the recently censored Safe and Effective. Now, I'm going into pitch mode here and I want you to listen because this is important. So if you haven't heard about it already, Oracle Films partnered with Mark Sharman, who's the former director of ITV News and BSkyB, to create a documentary called Safe and Effective, A Second Opinion. It's a 55-minute documentary narrated by actor John Bow, which essentially examines some of the critical harms that have been created by this mass vaccine campaign and exploring the systemic weaknesses that we've touched upon today that have enabled that to happen. Now, this was censored on YouTube after it reached nearly 1 million views. Tomorrow night, we have a private screening event where firstly, Mark and Phil, who are behind the film, the makers of the film, are going to give a short talk each about the motivation for the film, how it came together, you know, their view on how it's an important piece of work in order to start stimulating and open these conversations. We're then going to watch the film in full together, 55-minute documentary. And then afterwards, we'll have a Q&A and discussion about the film and what we can do next. So if you're in Bristol or in the Bristol area and you want to come and join us in person, we're going to be in the city of Bristol. We've only got 10 or 11 tickets left to the in-person event tomorrow night in person. So if you're in the area, come and see us. You can go to weareelevate.org/directorscut. Even if you've already seen the film, come and join the discussion, meet like-minded people, hear from Mark and Phil, and get your chance to be involved in the discussion and Q&A and explore how we can take these issues further. And if you can't join us in person, we're also going to be participating online. So you'll be able to watch the opening keynotes from Mark and Phil. You'll be able to watch the director's cut from the comfort of your home, and you'll also be able to participate in the Q&A. So if you're in the Bristol area or would like to travel, you can come and see us in person. 10 or 11 tickets is all we've got left tomorrow night. And we've got, you know, we've got an unlimited number of 500 tickets available for the online event, you know, subject to how many Zoom spaces we've got. So for either event, in either case, if you'd like to join us in person or online, go to weareelevate.org/directorscut. That's weareelevate.org/directorscut. You'll hear about the event. You'll be able to see how to join us in person or get online tickets. Or if you're already a supporter of the Elevate Network, your tickets are included. You'll also find out how to become a supporter of the program that we've got put together. It gives you access to all our online events, so you can join the Safe and Effective event tomorrow night and next week's COVID-19 public inquiry panel. So you get to join all of our events. You get access to our entire back catalog for the same price as you'd get for paying a one-off ticket to join the online event. So the reason why we charge for these things is because we have to find a way to fund independent media, Tomorrow's event specifically is going to help us to fund the film because it was self-financed by Mark and the team. So a proportion of the proceeds are going to go to Oracle and Mark to fund the film directly, and the remainder will go to Elevate Media to help fund our work too. So we invite you to come and join us. Your contribution really makes a difference, not only in terms of getting the message out there, these difficult subjects, but by helping to contribute financially, you can help us to enable to do what we do. So it's a really critical time. These guys have put their own money in their pocket. It's gone far over budget. And we really want to help them cover their costs. But more than that, we want to help generate enough income so that they we can give a sizable donation to them so they can start funding their next piece of work. So if you can join us tomorrow night, please help us spread the word. You know, it'd be lovely to have hundreds of us, if not thousands of us, joining in tomorrow night, because that would make a huge difference. So that's weareelevate.org/directorscut. I hope to see you there. Please spread the word, hit the share button, post this in Telegram groups. We've got to get the message out. And this is one action that you can take right now to support change. So please sign up, come and join us, and then share this with other people. And I've joked about losing my channel. You see me today, you might not see me tomorrow. Let's see what happens. All right. Good night for now. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate all your support. I hopefully see you on our very next broadcast of the Elevate Podcast.